AKA Norman Otis Richmond. You're listening to Uhuru Radio. And as I say every week, I would like to say Uhuru, Habaragani, Alafia, Nangadef, Yebo, Hotep, and Assalamu Alaikum. And I would like to thank Chairman Omali Ishatella and Archie Shep, Omali Ishatella, Chairman Omali Ishatella, for giving me the spot on Uhuru Radio, and Archie Shep for giving me the concept of diasporic music. And today is June 6th, and June is Black Music Month. As far as we are concerned, President Barack Hussein Obama has liquidated Black Music Month. He is now calling it African American Appreciation Month. But we at Uhuru Radio and many people around the country and around the world still refer to it as Black Music Month. I was listening to KGLH, which is Stevie Wonder's station out of Los Angeles. I was listening to it online, and they're still talking about Black Music Month. And we actually got a proclamation from the mayor of Toronto, Mayor David Miller. This might be the last proclamation we get because I think he's on his way out. And President Obama, with all due respect, is liquidated Black Music Month. It is African American Appreciation Month. We looked at it as an African international or a Pan-African thing, but President Obama seems to look at it as an American thing. And pardon me, but if we're going to be speaking with a young lady, a young sister by the name of Tiki Mercury Clark. But before we do that, we wanted to give you all the information. If you wanted to email us, you can email us at dj@uhururadio. And if there you have Skype, the Skype option is Uhuru Radio, pardon me, and the U.S. phone number and the Canada phone number is 727-565-1599. And if you're calling from the U.K., it's 020-8133-6629. And we're going to listen to Tiki Mercury Clark and come back and be speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark.
One, sing as we have kama wahenga wetu
kuba njengeze nyanya
songa, songa kama wahenga wetu
kuba njengeze nyanya
songa, songa kama wahenga wetu
kuba njengeze nyanya
songa, songa kama wahenga wetu
kuba njengeze nyanya.
Listening to Uhuru Radio, my name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond. I am based in Toronto, Canada, and we were listening to the music of Tiki Mercury Clark, Sing As We Have Always Done, and that's taken from a CD called Lift Every Voice and Sing, The Roots of Gospel Music. And joining me on the line from Toronto is Tiki Mercury Clark. Tiki, are you there, and how are you doing?
I am here. I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having
me on. It's my pleasure. Yeah, we have been playing this CD for quite a while, and it's getting a pretty good reaction on Uhuru Radio. I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you is, what inspired this particular CD, Lift Every Voice and Sing? I know it's it had to be a very ambitious project, because you have it's a triple CD, and you go all the way back to Kemet. Some people refer to it as Egypt, and you bring us right into the 21st century. And how did that CD come about?
Well, it actually grew out of a solo performance that I do, a one-woman show. It's a show that I wrote about 1990. My son at that time was in middle school, and he was coming home and doing some just incredible, what would you call them? I guess, comedic cut-ups of artists that had been going into the schools at that time. And he and his friends were complaining that what was being offered to them was something that would be actually more appropriate for grades 2 and grade 3 rather than grade 7 and 8. You know, at that point, really, they're more adult than they are children. And they can handle more comprehensive information. And so they were complaining about juvenile artists coming in, that they weren't dealing with the issues that they really were interested in and wanted to have answers to. In addition to that, I had always been trying to get more African history and Afrocentric history into the school system. I wanted it to be more inclusive. So when he told me about that, and I actually at that point was not aware of how often artists actually went into schools, I thought, well, you know what, I think I can do better than that. And so I sat down and I wrote the show primarily for middle schools. And it took me a while to get into the schools. The show is, I asked for 70 minutes, 60 absolute minimum to go into the schools, which in and of itself just threw them. They didn't believe that kids could actually have that kind of attention span. And because it is... a very organic show. It doesn't rely on a lot of technical gizmos. I don't use a PowerPoint or any of those other things. It's myself, a piano, a PA system, and that's it. And so it did take a little constant nudging and pushing to get my foot in the door to actually do a demonstrative sort of a sample presentation to a school board, and then they put me into the first school, they put me into an all-white school as an experiment to see if it would go over. And once I got a standing ovation, they said, well, I guess it's okay. So from then I started performing it in middle schools. And then, of course, a lot of the teachers have moved around, and sometimes in the schools up here, instead of having a separate middle school, a separate grade 6, 7, or 8, they have it kindergarten to grade 8. And so a lot of the teachers started pushing for the school, for the performance to be available to more than just those grades. It ended up that I was doing it from kindergarten to grade 8. And then it started going into high school as well. And then I also perform it in regular show business venues like Harbour Front here in Toronto and the Art Gallery, the Royal Ontario Museum, and various concert venues. So because I wrote it, I researched it, I know the material, and because even at that point when I started performing it in 1990, I'd been in the business for over 20 years, I'd been performing a long time, I know how to perform to different audiences. So I have that flexibility that I can perform to children and I can perform to adults. So I've done it in a few places in the States. I've done it overseas. I've done it in Bermuda. And
now,
to let you know, the teachers kept bugging me about doing a video of the show,
mm-hmm.
which I did not want to do, because one of the things that I wanted to stress was the oral work, the work of listening to knowledge rather than viewing it all the time. The other thing, of course, is there are no flies on me, and I know that if I produced a video, they're going to buy the video for, you know, $25 or whatever as I would have priced
for
that.
And cut you out.
And stop me from coming in and performing. Right. So I said, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it out as an oral work and try to make it as much still a solo performance as when I perform it live. And indeed, when I went into the studio and did the narrative, I went in and I did the narrative just as if I was speaking to an audience, and I did it in one shot, and then went back and filled in all kinds of extra things that, of course, I can't do when I'm by myself. And that's how it came about.
Are you listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio? I'm speaking with Tiki Mercury Clark, who has a fantastic CD, a triple CD called Lift Every Voice and Sing, The Roots of Gospel Music. Now, June is Black Music Month, and Black Music Month was created by people like Kenny Gamble, I think his name is Muhammad Lachman now, and Ed Wright, and people like that in 1979. They went to the White House, and Jimmy Carter declared June Black Music Month after he butchered Salt Peanuts in front of a big audience. And he wanted Dizzy Gillespie and Max Roach were there, and he wanted them to perform Salt Peanuts. And, of course, Dizzy Gillespie, asked President Carter, well, we will do it with the proviso that you sing it. And, of course, being the peanut farmer that he is, he butchered it. And Black Music Month came about. Last year, the current president of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, liquidated Black Music Month. He's called now what you call African American Appreciation Month. And when Black Music Month came about, well, supposedly many of us felt that it was a pan-African or an African international situation where we would recognize music from Africa, the Caribbean, North America, Pacific Isles, wherever African people were. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on this name change and your thoughts on Black Music Month.
Well, the name change is a shame. It really is. It it almost reminds me that in ancient, from the Nile Valley civilizations, there's very... very deep and very profound spiritual roots, and there are a lot of spiritual writings, and one of the things that is often cited as the actual precursor to the Ten Commandments and other things is called the 42 Laws of Ma'at, and one of them is, I shall not commit treason against my ancestors. And when I see things like this that are done, that's sort of the first thing that comes to mind, that it is like committing treason against ancestors. Of course, Black Music Month looks at the fact that we are a global people. We are a global African people, and so is our music. And to limit it to simply one nation trivializing the contributions of especially even the roots coming from the continent. I'm not surprised, though, because, you know, I hope I don't upset very many Americans, but in my opinion, from what I have seen, the president is an imperialist. So
I don't think listeners of this radio show would have a problem with that.
Okay. and that's very typical, you know, that's very typical of American imperialists. To turn something that is actually international and global and into something that's just purely, you know, the red, white, and blue. So
Yankee
I'm
Doodle
not surprised.
Dandy.
Mm.
Yeah, Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's a disappointment, but not really a surprise. And it sort of goes along with other things that he's done as well to make sure that folks who are not of African descent are not upset, you know, or identifying him too strongly with the African community. But Black Music Month is a very important thing because I find that the push is even stronger now to try to proprietize African music as being somehow, quote, universal, and which is basically de-Africanizing it. There is really much more of a push than even before, it's been in a lot of other things. For example, the category urban music, which really makes my teeth hurt. I really don't like that one as well. Or even often world music, which quite often I find up here is really means African music, continental African music.
When you talk about urban music, I've always had a problem with urban music since I was born in the country in a house with a midwife. So there's nothing urban about myself. So
yeah,
I'm a country boy.
Yeah, and to take that again, it's moving it away from the cultural group and racial group that gave birth to and nourished the music, and I find it very disrespectful, and I find it just confuses the issue, and it again prevents us from even knowing amongst ourselves what we should be celebrating as ours, and insisting that other people recognize as ours. It's not to say that they can't sing it or try to sing it or whatever else, but acknowledge it as ours. When our singers, whether they'd be, you know, Leontine Price or Kathleen Battle or whoever, when they sing European classical music, when they're singing music that has come out of Italy, no one proceeds to call it something other than Italian music or European classical
That's correct.
Music. Okay, so we're just asking for the same
thing.
I
unite with that. No, that makes plenty sense. And I wanted to ask you, summing up, because I know you don't have a whole lot of time, but Tiki Mercury Clark, in performing in Toronto and around the world, where do you perform now? And, you know, like, what does this month look like for you in terms of performing?
Well, in terms of performing, I'm just going to do a couple of things this month. I'm into the Barry Jazz and Blues Festival on the 18th. I'll be doing a noon hour concert in a wonderful rotunda. I had done it last year as well. They have just this wonderful piano, and it's a great sound. So I'll be doing that. I have another private job again this week. I do a lot of private things rather than public the nightclub scene here is a little different than it used to be years ago. And I also find that I kind of prefer more of a concert or a cabaret setting where people are coming specifically to listen to the music and are really intent on that, rather than having to continue to battle that. The kind of music that I do is a little bit more dramatic and thoughtful anyways. It doesn't lend itself that well to a club where there's a lot of, you know, constant noise and chatter and drinking and food being served, etc., while the performance is going on. It just doesn't lend itself that well to that. So I prefer more of a concert type setting. But I'm also doing a lot of writing. I am really hoping this year we can get in to the studio, myself and my musical partner, Rudy Kwame Williams, who is also the producer on Lift Every Voice and Sing, the Roots of Gospel Music, and the percussionist as well, to get in the studio and do a jazz album this year, which is primarily what I do. I should mention that. I am a singer, pianist, storyteller. And so that was the storytelling aspect, part of the storytelling that I do, but I also work primarily as a jazz singer, pianist, or I'm thinking of myself more as a song stylist. And we want to get in the studio to do an album of also including a lot of my original material. So I'm concentrating on the preparation of that, because, of course, the more you can do outside the studio, the cheaper it's going to be than if you're trying to rehearse under studio time, you know. I'm also getting ready to go to Africa.
Is this your first time?
My first time, yes.
And what countries will you be going? What states will you be going to?
I'll be going to Nigeria. There is an international colloquium on slavery, slave trade, and their consequences. That's the name of it. And it's in the Osun State and in Nigeria. And it's an international gathering. I'll be going there, and I will be presenting my one-woman show, Lift Every Voice and Sing the Roots of Gospel Music, which let me explain to, because I don't know whether you have covered this before, but the title Lift Every Voice and Sing the Roots of Gospel Music, and it's actually sort of, this is part one. What it does is it traces the development of spirituals, but from the standpoint of what shaped the people and what they took with them and carried with them from as early as the Nile Valley civilizations across the continent of Africa, across the Atlantic Ocean, to the Caribbean, to the United States and Canada, and what they put in to create the spirituals, which, of course, besides being a music that internally encouraged them and strengthened them, and you can narrowly look at them as just simply a religious music, but I see the spirituals as far more than that. They were also a resistance music. They were part of the many tools that we used to counter oppression and our enslavement. And the spirituals were part of that. They were used as a way of passing messages on the Underground Railroad. And so in
I don't want to interrupt you, but could I interrupt you 1 second? Wasn't
sure.
Canaan was supposed to be like a code name for Canada at one point in terms of spirituals?
Yeah, Canaan was used, yeah. Canaan, the Promised Land. It depended what years you were talking about, because for a long time, most of the people escaping the enslaving states in the United States would go to after the 1700s and the early 1800s, they had gone to the northern United States. Now, I have to stress that because a lot of people, even in the United States, are not aware that the northern United States enslaved African peoples just as much as the South, okay? It's not just large farms and plantations where our labor, our unpaid labor, was extracted, but also in the northern United States to build cities, to build farms there, to build the wharves, to make the roads and the buildings and all that other stuff, all in the north. But they started to abolish enslavement in the late 1700s, going into the early 1800s. And then at that point, many refugees from the slave-holding states would go into the northern United States. After 1793, however, in what was then called Upper Canada, which is now the province of Ontario, a law was passed, and this is due to political reasons, and I'm not going to get into all the different reasons why, but a law was passed that said if anyone escaping enslavement from someplace else made it onto Canadian soil, they would be free. And anyone who tried to return them to enslavement would themselves be charged with kidnapping. So at that point, Canada really became the promised land. But still at that point, most people would go in the northern United States. It was in 1850 when the Fugitive Slave Law was passed in by Congress, which gave federal support to a previous law and gave support to enslavers and other hostage keepers and their agents who were going into the northern United States and taking people who they said had been enslaved and taking them back down into the enslaving states. At that point, people started going en masse into Canada because Canada had abolished enslavement in 1834. Okay, so Canada had officially abolished enslavement in 1834, which is something, again, other people often don't know, including many Canadians, that Canada had enslavement too.
Yeah, I remember. I don't want to cut you again, but I remember going to L.A. City College, and I used to tell the professor, who was a Canadian, mm-hmm. that the only reason that they didn't really have slavery was because they couldn't. It was too cold to plant cotton and sugar cane, and he would have a fit.
Well, again, you know, which is one of the reasons it's important to know that in the North, where they were not planting cotton and sugar, they still had enslavement. Because in mm-hmm. Canada, without the planting of cotton, they still had enslavement. They could still, wherever labor was needed, they could use enslaved people. Okay,
yes,
so
correct.
It had nothing to do with whether you had a large farm holding or not. You could use them in the cities. You could, you know, you use people in every way, in any way you can, you know, and you can force them to labor. You use them in whatever way you can, and so it's not limited to just agricultural holdings. In Canada, we had a very bizarre situation because even after that act was passed in 1793, which gave freedom to anyone who had escaped from elsewhere and made it to Canadian soil, Canadian enslaved Africans remained enslaved. And so you actually had this situation going on until 1834 when the British abolished enslavement through most, not all, as is often reported, but through most of their empire, including Canada. But you had from 1793 to 1834, you had a situation where Canadian-born enslaved peoples would escape from here to take their chances in the northern United States because they had abolished enslavement before 1834 in Canada. So you have the so-called Underground Railroad going in both directions. And that, again, is something that is not well known. But it's one of those bizarre things that does take place. People will often make a point of talking about how in the 1793 law that Canadian-born enslaved Africans were supposed to be freed at the age of 25. But they conveniently forget that it is the enslaver, right, who determines how old you are. And so you could remain 22, 23 for a very long time, and the record shows this. The record shows also, and those few situations where it looked as though they were going to be forced to have to free someone, they would pick them up and take them down to the United States and sell them in those states which still had strong enslavement.
All right, Tiki, is there, I've taken up all of your time, but I want to. How can people get your purchase a CD if people are in England or in South Africa?
Yeah, they can go to my website, and I'll give it to you. It's long. It's kind of long, but you can also just put in my name, Tiki, 1K, T-I-K-I, last name Mercury Clark, and of course do it all one word. It's hyphenated, but Mercury, like the planet, Clark, C-L-A-I-K-E.
With an E.
Now, the website is Kakuyan Stronghold, and that is, of course, a triple W, and then K-A-K-U-Y-A-N U Y O N, like in Niger, S T R O N G H O L D. So it's all one word, KakuyanStronghold.com. Okay.
Well, what we're going to do is put this on the web, on the Uhuru Radio webpage, so people can.
They can go there and they can email me, and I'm looking after my own mailing now. I used to have it going through another company, but I'm looking after it directly now. So they can email me, and I
communicate directly with you.
Yep.
Okay. So thank you very much for a very informative 20 minutes, and we would like to invite you back on at another time.
I would love to come on again, and thank you very much for continuing on. I find your memory absolutely phenomenal. I don't know how you remember all these little things about all these different people over all those years. It's incredible.
I inherited it from my father. my father had a much better memory than me.
Oh, really? Okay,
oh, yeah.
It's a family trait. All right, well, thank you very much, Jolly, I'll be seeing you.
All right, take care of yourself.
All right.
All right, you have been listening to Tiki Mercury Clark. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. This is Uhuru Radio, and the name of this show is Diasporic Music. And we're going to continue. We're going to shine the spotlight on David Ruffin very shortly. And I think we're going to listen to some music right now from a young man from Toronto, Canada, who was born in Jamaica, and he was came to Canada at a young age, went to school here in Toronto at Central Tech, and his name is Jay Douglas, and he's talking about guns and drugs. This is Jay Douglas.
We don't need no justice.
Have some fun.
Lord, that's not the way
Jaja wants us to grow now.
Yeah. No, we don't need no more guns. Lord, that's not the way
Jaja wants us to live now.
So you shouldn't kill your own
brothers and sisters.
You know it's impossible to kill the
mighty creator.
You gotta start out today with a
new way of thinking.
Don't you go there with that old devil philosophy. Why, we don't need no drugs to
have some fun.
Lord, that's not the way
Jaja wants us to grow now.
Yeah. No, no, Lord. No more guns. Lord, that's not the way
Jaja wants us to live now.
I know there's lots of greed and
too much corruption.
What we really need now is some
spiritual direction.
Thank you, Father, for your
goodness and mercies.
We don't need no guns and drugs, Lord.
Have some fun.
Lord, that's not the way
Jaja wants us to grow. Jaja wants us to live now.
Tell me, how could you shoot and kill your own brothers and sisters when you know it's impossible to kill the
mighty creator?
We gotta start out today with a new way of thinking. Don't deal with that abba-dabba philosophy, no.
Now clap your hands and stamp your feet. This happens to be a Trade Wild Treat.
It's not that I don't love you. You know how much I do. It's not that I found somebody to take the place of you, but it's just the feel within me when you touch my hand, and the fear that shakes my body.
Thank you. know how much I do. And it's nice that I found someone to take the place of you. It's just to feel the deal within me every time you touch my hand. And a dread that shakes my body that even I don't understand. So I'm leaving. You ever have before, I don't understand it, but I know it's gonna take everything I've got to keep walking out the door. But those arms you got around me will let me go someday.
I'm gonna walk away.
you, baby, my whole world is incomplete. Cause, honey, I can't see you no more. That was all that you said, baby. But you just might as well have raised the gun to my head. Baby, baby, I'll fight to do it. My whole world ended the moment you left me.
You're listening to Uhuru Radio, and my name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, and the name of our show is Diasporic Music, and we are still shining the spotlight on David Ruffin, a.k.a. Davis Eli Ruffin, who was born in Why Not, Mississippi. And David Ruffin was a legendary temptation and was the bad boy of the group and was a very outspoken man who clashed many times with Berry Gordy. He also, I guess he was kicked out of the Temptations, and he reunited with Eddie Kendricks and Dennis Edwards, and they put together a rival set of Temptations. And I began watching David Ruffin when I was a youngster. I really was, to be perfectly honest, David Ruffin is my favorite male vocalist, and I saw him many times. Every time I could go see Ruffin, any time, any place, anywhere, I would see he'd go see Mr. Ruffin. And he and David Ruffin refused, he and Eddie Kendricks, pardon me, refused to perform in South Africa during the apartheid days, and they also participated in that Sun City project with Little Steven and Jimmy Cliff and Darlene Love, Gil Scott-Heron, Miles Davis, Herbie Hancock, and he was opposed to apartheid and apartheid in America and in South Africa. So we had an opportunity to meet Mr. Ruffin and Mr. Kendricks on many occasions. And we're going to take a pause for the cause and come back and play a couple of more tunes with Davis Eli Ruffin from Why Not, Mississippi.
Get ready now for one of the most important events of our time, the 5th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party. The Congress convenes on July 10th through 14th in Washington, D.C. under the slogan, One People, One Party, One Destiny. Hear presentations by African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela and other leaders of the APSP, and witness as the party ushers in a new era of struggle. A new day is on the horizon. The U.S. front of the African Revolution will never be the same. For more info on the Congress, go to www.apspcongress.org or call 727-821-6620.
And my name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, and this is a Black Music Month special on Diasporic Music, and we're on Uhuru Radio, and we're going to play some music right now from Mr. Ruffin. This is the song, when he left the Temptations, the first song he recorded was My Whole World Ended, and this was a follow-up tune. I thought this was one of the most tragic songs I've ever heard. This is a blues song, really, and Mr. Ruffin kills it. This one is called... I've lost everything that I ever had. Now I'm losing you. This is David Ruffin.
I'm raised an only child. My folks died when I was four. They were trapped in a fire way up on the 14th floor. So my loving granny raised me.
Time for David as he joins us with a tune from his latest album that happens to be one of my favorites. It's entitled Common Man, Mr. David Ruffin.
Oh, yeah. I have dreamed the dream of every common man. Hoping to rise to the top. I have sworn by my blood, as your man, my love,
that one day, I promise one day your heartache will stop. But I've never, 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 never changed. I've never changed one single grain of sand. Oh, thanks to you, baby. But just loving a common man, I want to thank you to see. Oh, I thought that I failed you so. But that's when you turned around and looked me in my eyes and you let me know. You said it softly. I didn't have to worry about being a common man. You said, David, you don't have to worry about rising to the top. You said, I didn't have to swear by my blood. But oh, baby, that one day your heartache would stop. Then you put your arms around me and you said, you never, 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 never cared. If I'd never change one single grain of sand, you said, I love. A common man. Well, my gratitude just keep on growing. Yeah, recognizing me, I thank you, baby. Yeah, for respecting me. Yeah, I won't thank you, baby. For in a time of need,
so, Mr. Ruffin, we finally crossed paths. Mm-hmm. It's great to have you here. It seems like I've been missing you lately. You were in Chicago while I was out here.
Right.
And when I was out here, you were in Chicago, you were out here. Your album, I understand, is produced by a good friend of mine.
This party on December 12th through 18th for a 7-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshetela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Simple, creator of The Spirit of Marcus Garvey, a one-man show in which Simple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist International. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. Double occupancy and deposits start as low as $50 today, $250 by July 12th. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. That's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, freedom. Uhuru.
You're listening to Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond. The name of our show is Diasporic Music. And Diasporic Music is on Uhuru Radio every 2 weeks. And we play music made in the West, but not of the West. And we were listening to the music of David Ruffin. We heard I've Lost Everything That I've Ever Had. And we also heard Common Man from King David. And we're going to listen to some commentaries from Mumia Abu-Jamal and come back and start part two of Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio.
Ecocide. The great oil spill of 2010 is spreading far beyond the reaches of the Gulf of Mexico. It's spreading in our minds, seeping in our psyches, and oozing into our collective consciousness. It is soiling our bathwaters, despoiling our dishwaters, and roiling our rainwaters. Every major human habitation has set itself beside rushing waters. Cairo drank from the Nile. Paris fished from the Seine. Baghdad swam between the Tigris and the Euphrates. And Lagos dipped its toes into the chilly Atlantic. Water is life. And the politics of capitalism has given us a toxic mess which has destroyed fishing and shrimping grounds for miles, perhaps for half a century, perhaps forever. This is ecocide, the destruction of the environment for private profit, brought by fees and donations to politicians who are sellers of the earth that no man actually owns and none of us can create. This is far more than an environmental problem. It is an economic problem, a political problem, an ideological problem, and a spiritual problem. How we think of the earth determines how we will interact with it. If it is nothing more than the property of corporate exploitation, then we will see more and more of this carnage. This is what capitalism looks like. And if this ain't unsustainable, what is? Events such as this show us the absurdity of our politics and the reach of the market. For though millions of environmentalists voted for the new administration in fear of the drill baby drill crowd, we got drill baby anyway. The triumph of bipartisanship and the tragedy of devastated lands and waters. Is it just me, or does an aerial shot resemble blood pooling on the waters, thick, viscous, and red? We're spoiling life's source for little pieces of printed paper, or even worse, electronic signals stored in computers. We are mad people who will learn, if only too late, that we are all sons and daughters of this earth. The further we stretch from that simple truth, the closer we come to extinction as a species. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Lessons lost. It's been generations since the Vietnam War, or what may be called the war that most Americans want to forget. In part, that's because the U.S. lost to Vietnam. At the time, it was almost unthinkable. How could a tiny third world country best a global superpower? The secret was simple. The Vietnamese refused to lose. Years ago, former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara was a hawk at war who advocated tonnage of bombing against the nationalists trying to unify the country. Years later, after a lifetime away from the halls of power, McNamara decried the warlike fervor of those years in the documentary The Fog of War. McNamara, speaking of World War II, said, "We burned to death 100,000 Japanese civilians in Tokyo." He added, "General Curtis LeMay recognized that what he was doing would be thought immoral if his side had lost." McNamara asked, "But what makes it immoral if you lose, and not immoral if you win?" Vietnam was an imperial war created by lies and sustained by lies. Sound familiar? An empire wages war to save face and to extend its influence. It's not about democracy or terrorism or good governance or drug control. It's about power and global spheres of influence, period. Today, Afghanistan is a narco state, something that the Taliban wouldn't tolerate. It's as far from democracy as possible. And both Iraq and Afghanistan have governments based on stolen elections. Is this worth the lives, health, or sanity of your loved ones? From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And we would love to hear from you. If you wanted to send an email, you can send it to dj@uhururadio.com. The Skype option is Uhuru Radio. The phone number in North America is 727-565-1599. If you call in from the UK, you can call 020-813-3666-29. This is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. And right now we're going to go play some music from the late, great Sam Cooke. We're going to pay tribute to the gospel idiom. This is Black Music Month, and African music began on the African continent, and then people went to various places around the New World, the so-called New World. And in Brazil, the people created samba, and in Trinidad, people created calypso, which began turned into soca. And in Jamaica, the music eventually became reggae. And in the United States of America and in Canada, people came up with the blues, and later with gospel, pardon me, that started with the gospel and then became blues. And right now we're in the hip-hop stage, and we're going to listen to the roots of African music in the Western Hemisphere. This is some gospel by Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, and it's a cappella.
Oh, Jesus, gave me water. Jesus, gave me water. Jesus, gave me water. I want to let his praises swell. Jesus, gave me water. Jesus, gave me water. Jesus, gave me water. And it was not well. There was a woman from Samaria came to the well to get some water. There she met a stranger who did a story tell. That a woman dropped a pitcher, she drank and was made richer from the water he gave her. And it was not in the well. Yes, gave her water. Jesus gave her water. Jesus gave her water. I wanna let his praises swell. Jesus gave her water. He gave that woman water. Gave living love and lasting water. And it was not in prayer. Well, on that woman he had pity. She ran back to the city, crying glory, hallelujah, and did his wonders tell. She left my Savior singing. She came back to him bringing the time she had water, Lord. And it was not in the well. Yes, gave her water. Jesus gave her water. Jesus gave her water. I want to let his praises swell. Jesus gave that woman water. Gave her that loving less than water. Water. And it was not in prayer. Well, Lord, that woman left for shouting. There was no room for doubting that she had met a Savior who did her wonders tell. Every time she doubted, she started to think about him, the man that gave her that water, Lord. And it was not in the well. Yes, gave her water. Jesus gave her water. Jesus gave her water. I'm gonna let his praises swell. Anyway, gave that woman water. Gave her that loving less than water. Water, 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 loving water. And it was not in the well.
Wonderful.
Minister was preaching,
and the crowd standing near. The congregation was singing a tune, and a voice was so loud. Crying out the pain they see, for the song that they sang was so touching. They were singing, "Nearer, my God, to thee." Oh, near, my God, I wanna be there, Lord.
and there are truly. You kept on singing, here am I, Lord, to thee, Lord. And oh, yes, dear. You kept on singing. Some of them were crying, but they kept on singing, here am I, God, to thee. And oh, yes, they did. And songs have a feeling. There's a story in every song that we sing. And songs have been known to lift heavy burdens. If all of our troubles, to God we owe the blame. And if we all are Christian, we ought not to be ashamed to lift our voices in my Jesus' name. We ought to be glad, oh, to sing, here my God to thee. And I have mercy, Lord, keep on singing, nearer to thee. Sometime I get so lonely, Lord, but let me get nearer. I wanna get a little bit nearer to thee, Lord. And come on, Lord, I wanna be my Lord. I wanna be nearer, Lord, and nearer to thee. I feel all my trials gonna be over now if I can get nearer. I wanna get a little bit nearer to thee. And I have mercy, Lord. Trouble. And trouble is one thing that comes into everybody's life sometimes. And even the rich now and the poor alive, help me, Lord. They do not always have peace of mind. But my God told me, he told me these trials would come. So I decided to let my God's will be done. I'll never give up every day. I wanna get nearer. Father, let me get nearer to thee. I tell him, Lord, I'll be alright if I can get nearer. My God, I wanna be so near, Lord, and nearer to thee. Sometimes I feel that crying, Lord, but let me get nearer. I wanna get a little bit nearer to thee, Lord. And come on, Lord, I wanna be nearer, my God. I wanna be so near, Lord, and nearer to thee. Whoa, 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 come on, Lord, I'm trying to get a little bit nearer to thee. Have mercy, Lord. Sometimes I like to be in the company, and then again I like to steal off all alone. A song is the only thing, Father, that will console me, Lord, when I know trouble's about to come. I can fall down on my knees and call God late at night, and I know God, he'll make my burdens all right. If I tell him, Lord, I've got a desire, just let me get a little nearer. I tell him, Lord, I'll be all right if I can get nearer. Do you know that bad company will make a good child go astray?
But I don't care what that child may do. That mother, she'll pray for the night in me. But they bring that child before mother. No matter, it's no matter what the crowd. When they say, who is that child? Mother, say that child is mine. I've been praying to Jesus. Let my boy get there. Father, let him get there. When I was a little boy, mother used to steal off all alone. And I used to wonder what my mother was doing. Kept me long. I crept out one morning. I found mother with folded arms. And mother had to rise up. She was looking up toward the sky. And I saw the tears as they fell down my mother's eyes. But I can still hear the song mother was singing. Near am I go.
And you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, and joining me on the line from his home in Chicago is the brother of Sam Cooke, L.C. Cooke. L.C. Cooke, how are you doing, my good friend?
I'm better than good, Norman. How are you?
Pretty good. Better than good. That's real good.
That's right.
Now, we just heard Nearer My God to Thee with the Soul Stirs, and that was Sam Cooke. Is that Paul Foster? Paul Foster. He's from Louisiana, so you know he can sing.
That's Paul Foster.
Part of the world, but I couldn't.
Yeah, from Shreveport.
Well, I was born right near Shreveport, but
yeah.
I got some Mississippi roots too, so I'm
I heard that
you and Sam and Paul Foster. But this is June, and June is Black Music Month, and Sam Cooke was a singer, songwriter, producer, and entrepreneur, and a humanitarian. We're in the 21st century, and it looks as if your brother, Sam Cooke, your older brother, it looks like his legacy is going to live on forever and ever. Or do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with it. As time goes by, Sam get bigger and bigger.
That's a
testimony of it. Of how great he was.
In terms of yourself, I would like to, this is your interview, and I know that, you know, after Sam passed away, and even before, when Sam was in the land of the living, you did some recording, and I wanted to talk to you about, you know, the trip you took to Jamaica with Sam. I know that...
No, I didn't go with him. I went by myself.
Oh, okay. I know that
I went with the Upsetters.
You went after Sam passed away.
I went after Sam passed away, right.
Okay.
I went in 65.
All right. Let's talk about your experience in Jamaica. How were you were treated in Jamaica? I understand.
Oh, man, I was treated raw, man. People loved me in Jamaica, man. And plus, I got to that's when I met Prince Buster.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Buster was with me every day. Right. Like we did at 16 after we was in the theater, we was in the Regal Theater there in Kingston, and we played that for two straight weeks. And after that, we did 16 one-nighters. And our Prince Buster wouldn't let me ride on the bus. He took me everywhere I had to go in his car.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never stepped my foot on the bus, not one time. And people in Jamaica loved me, man. When they used to see, they like they see me coming down the street, they couldn't say L.C. Cook. They said, I'll see Cook. Sweet man, brother.
Sweet man,
you know, they
brother.
Call Sam Sweet Man.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what they just bowed to me. And I'm going to show you what happened and how much they love me in Jamaica. I'm walking down the street one day, and I seen a man with a unusual straw hat that I'd never seen this type of straw hat. And I was telling him how nice the hat was, and the man took the hat right off his head and gave it to me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But that's that sounds like Jamaica. I wanted to ask you, this is L.C. Cook, the younger brother of Sam Cook. You told me a story one time that when Sam went to Jamaica, he went to Trenchtown, and they left him by himself.
Prince Buster left him by himself,
but he wouldn't leave you by yourself.
No, Prince Buster wouldn't leave me. No, but he took Sam. And so when he took Sam, Sam asked him, said, Prince Buster said, I've been everywhere. Now I want you to take him to the lowest part of town. And so Prince Buster said, that shocked him, you know. He said, his greatest Sam was he want to go where the poor people at, you know. And he said, that was surprising to him. He said, and Sam took him. He took Sam to his neighborhood. He said, oh, see, I was so scared till I left Sam. He said, and so when I, one day we was talking, and I got ready to ask him to take me. And he stopped me. He said, I know what you get ready to say before you say it. He said, you want to go to the lowest part of town like Sam. And I laughed. I said, that's right. He said, well, I'm going to take you, but I'm going to wait on you. And he took me, and he waited. And I had a ball, man. As soon as I stepped out of Prince Buster's car, man, people started hollering, man. And I had a good time.
Well, I know I read a lot about the Cook family history, and I know that your mother came from like a real prominent all-black town out of Mississippi.
Right, Mine Bow.
Mine
Bow, Mississippi.
Sam was born in Clarksdale. Could you tell me about your mother and your father and the role that they played in shaping you and Sam and all of your siblings?
Well, my father, you know, was a minister.
Yes, sir.
And when he met my mother, she was 16. And he said that when he seen her, he knew that was his wife. And what really got him, my mother, after he preached, and he had to come back and preach later on, my mother invited him to dinner. He said, well, we don't have but an hour. My mother said, it's plenty enough time. My mother took him home, cooked dinner for him. He said it was unbelievable. He said he knew right then that was his wife. And my father shaped us from when we was kids. We had to go to church. It wasn't by choice. If you lived in my father's house, it was a must. You had to go to church. And so that's where we got our first singing experience from, singing in church, because we had a family group called the Singing Children. It was me, Sam, I was singing bass, Sam was singing tenor. Sam wasn't singing lead. My brother Charles was singing lead. My older sister Mary was singing lead, and my middle sister Hattie was singing baritone.
Right.
And that's how we formed the group. And my father and my mother sung in the choir. So it was very much instrumental in our bringing our singing career.
And I know you used to always tell me, I heard you tell this story many times about the sticks when Sam told you he was not going to work a 9-to-5, that he was going to be a singer. Could you tell the audience that story?
Well, we was out playing one day, and Sam had 12 of these popsicle wooden sticks. And he was sticking these sticks in the ground, you know. So I said, man, what you doing? He said, L.C., these sticks are my audience. He said, I don't consider these sticks. I consider these people. He said, I'm learning how to sing before an audience so I won't be nervous when I get ready to sing. So I said, what you mean, sing? He said, L.C., I'm going to sing for a living. He said, I'm never going to work. He said, because I figured out the system. He said, if you work from 9-to-5, you only have money on Friday, payday. He said, come Friday again, you broke. He said, I don't want to be broke no time in my life. He said, every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I want to have money in my pocket. He said, that's why I'm going to be a singer. I'm not going to have no job, no 9-to-5. And he never did. But that shows you what man over matter can do for you.
I'm speaking with the L.C. Cook of Chicago, the brother of Sam Cook. And I remember you telling the story about Sam being, I don't know if he was really tricked by Little Willie John, the great singer who sang blues, but I mean, Little Willie John telling Sam these stories about his mother died, his father died 5 or 6 times, and Sam would give him like $5,000 or $6,000, and everybody would be mad at Sam.
But Sam loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Sam knew he was lying, but Sam just loved him that much, man. He was good at Little Willie John anything, man. Little Willie John, he loved to gamble. And he'd be gambling my older brother, Charles. And Charles would take all his money. And then he'd go to Sam, telling Sam, Sam, I got to send some money home to my wife and the kids, and I ain't got no money. Charles took all my money. Sam, there you go, right in his pocket. So we stopped letting Sam carry money. We wouldn't let Sam. We just stopped him from carrying money. Because Sam, anybody come with a story could get Sam's money. I don't care who you was. He didn't even have to know you. But if you come to Sam with a story, Sam will reach in his pocket and just give you everything.
And I know you don't have that much time, but I want you to tell the audience who are some of the singers that Sam influenced and that are out here today and that were out there before.
Everybody you hear? Everybody you hear today, Sam influencing one way or another. Believe me. Like it's a little bit of Sam cooking everybody. And some of every singer that's singing have stole a little bit of Sam, believe me.
David Ruffin.
Or anybody you name and stole a little bit from Sam. Even from when it comes to the gospel singers. And they own up to it. They don't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I was seeing Ranch Allen one day. I was shopping. I was in the clothing store, and here come Ranch Allen.
Ranch Allen, the great gospel singer.
Right. Ranch Allen, the first thing he said, L.C., everybody I know steal a little bit from Sam. He said, include myself. I said, I know. He said, well, that's just a tribute to your brother, how great he was. I said, I know that too. Because, see, I knew Sam could sing lead before anybody in my family. See, because me and Sam used to go knock on people's doors, and Sam would sing all of the Ink Spots songs. See, what a lot of people don't know, Bill Kennedy or the Ink Spots, that's who Sam really loved.
If I didn't care.
Right, and Sam patted himself after him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people want to say Sam patted himself after this person and that person, but it's not true. Sam patted himself after Bill Kennedy. And then, odd as it seemed, he got his styling and his phrasing from Louis Armstrong.
Well, you know, I heard Bobby Womack say one time that Sam Cooke told him that Louis Armstrong was one of the greatest, if not the greatest singer. And Womack said that looked at Sam and said, you must be crazy. That guy can't sing. It just
Sam said, forget the voice. Sam said, forget the voice. He said, listen at the praise. And Sam was right. I'm going to tell you a quick story. Our Herb Alpert, you know, with Tijuana Brass?
Yes, sir.
Okay. He owned a record company. See, that was Sam's best friend in L.A. So he had Sam at his recording studio one day. He had a man from the Caribbean somewhere, and he was telling Sam how great this man was. So Sam said, you think he great? And Herb said, oh, yeah, man. Sam said, close your eyes. He said, don't look at him when he's singing. He said, close your eyes, or he will turn your back and tell me how great you think he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Herb Abel closed his eyes and didn't record the man.
Mm.
So that shows you how Sam knew the business.
Right.
See, Sam told him, said, you looking at him singing, he's doing all his movement and stuff, you know. He said, but on a piece of wax, you can't see that. So all you got is a cold piece of wax and a voice. So you ain't got nobody watching you dance and all that. He said, you watching the man, and his entertainment is getting over with you, not his voice. He said, but close your eyes or he's tearing your back. Then tell me how you like it.
But, you know, Sam Cooke was, as a songwriter, a lot of people, and I used to always try to tell younger people and my son that if you're writing,
music and you're trying to be a part of music, you have to read the newspaper, read history.
That's right.
And Sam was a person that I
constantly read.
Your sister.
Every day you'd seen Sam, Sam had a stack of books.
Mm-hmm.
Sam was always reading, always. He said the more you read, the more you're up to anything that's happening in life. And
right.
Sam could tell you a little bit of anything you bring up. I don't care what it was, astronaut, anything you bring up, Sam could tell you something about it. That's how versatile he was.
And Sam, did he go anyplace other than Jamaica in the Caribbean? And what was he planning to go to Africa and never made it there because he passed
He
away?
Never made it to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
He made it to England. And the
mm-hmm.
people love him to death over there. And the Rolling Stones, that's where the Rolling Stones and the Beatles first seen Sam. And they was crazy about Sam. And that's how come Alan Klein got to manage the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Because of Sam. Because he managed Sam.
Alan Klein just passed away. He was the man who managed Sam, the Rolling Stones.
Right, and the Beatles.
And the Beatles, right. And
right.
Also, Alan Klein, when I met you, Alan Klein's son, Jody Klein, came to Toronto.
That's right.
You and his wife of today, I understand.
Right, that's right. You're right. You got a good memory, Norman.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? Because
No, I would just like to say thank you for calling, and I want to tell all your listeners hello, and I love them. And I always look forward to talking to you, Norman. You're a good friend. And you've been a good friend from the first day I met you. And I love you like a brother.
Well, are you going to write that on my CD like you did Gerald? You said, I thought Gerald Austin was your baby brother, too.
Well, that's all right, but I got plenty of room. You like a brother,
right.
too.
All right. I appreciate that.
You know I come from a large family now.
Yeah, I know. A huge family.
That's right.
Yeah, the cooks are... How many cooks were there?
It was 5 boys and 3 girls, and then my mother and father, so it was 10 of us.
Mm. Yep, and everybody went out and made a name for themselves, huh?
Everybody did good in life.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. How was Charles doing?
Mm-hmm. He got a birthday coming the 26th of this month.
Charles was like the security man, right?
Yeah. Charles was Sam's chauffeur. Yeah, he took care of Sam good.
Well, I guess that CD, that DVD, people should get that DVD that Alan Klein put out.
Because it's a wonderful story of Sam.
You were in it.
Yes,
sister,
I'm in it. My sister, my brother,
father,
my brother. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'd just like to say thank you for calling, Norman. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, have a good one.
Same to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. And we have been speaking with L.C. Cook, the brother, younger brother of Sam Cook, and we're going to be listening to some more music from Sam Cook.
Wonderful God. So wonderful, he's wonderful, God, he's so wonderful. The Lord is my shepherd, he's my guide, whatever I need. The Lord will provide and praise my God's name. I know he's so wonderful. And whoa, he's wonderful. And I really believe the Lord is wonderful. Yes, he is. And whoa, he's wonderful. I know. He's so wonderful, yes he is. And whoa, whoa, if you never tried God, try the Lord one day, and see what my Father comes.
come down and make a way. And oh, and oh, I can't help but love God. He's so wonderful. And oh, and oh, he's a yes, he is. And I know the man is wonderful. Yes, he is. There's no limit to what my Lord can do. And well, oh, I love God. He's so wonderful.
And you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. And June is Black Music Month. It is not Urban Music Month. And it, according to the President of the United States, Barack Obama, it is now African American Appreciation Month, but we're still holding the African music and Black music up high. And that is not to say that African music or Black music is the only music. And I'll be liberal and say maybe it's not even the best music in the world. However, I think it is the most popular music in the world from 1873 until today. Black music has been the music, the most popular music in the world. If you remember, the Fifth Jubilee Singers left Tennessee and went to Europe, all over Europe, including Russia. It was not the Soviet Union at that time, and they killed people musically. After that, you had the Louis Armstrong took the world by storm. You know, after that, we had the big bands, the Count Basie, Duke Ellington. Then we had the Calypso came on the scene, and Harry Belafonte's record sold a million copies. And then we had the King and Queen of Rock and Roll and Chuck Berry. The King and Queen of Rock and Roll being Little Richard. They took the world by the storm. And then R&B, Otis Redding was bigger than Elvis Presley in England. And on up to today, the reggae people, Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Bunny Wailer, Judy Bart. I'm sounding like Deacon, like the Deacon Frazier now. But the reggae artists took the music all over the world, and we know what hip-hop is doing today. It is the most popular form of music probably on the planet, and hip-hop is being performed everywhere from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. There's some sort of hip-hop happening. And this is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and we're going to play some L.C. Cook. We heard L.C. Cook. We spoke to L.C. Cook, the younger brother of Sam. And L.C. Cook is an artist himself, and this is a song that Sam Cook wrote and produced for his younger brother. It's called Put Me Down Easy.
I don't know why it should be, but lately I can plainly see you're cool to me. Do what you wanna do, but darling, all I ask of you, put me down easy.
Put me down.
Plane. Put me down easy.
Put me down.
A long time coming. course it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
And you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and I think this about concludes today our Black Music Month special, one of our Black Music Month specials, and we shine the spotlight today on David Ruffin, Davis Eli Ruffin out of Why Not, Mississippi, and David Ruffin was replaced by a young man by the name of Dennis Edwards, and he was replaced by a man by the name of Ali Woodson. And Ali Woodson joined the Ancestors just the other day, and I think his funeral was in Los Angeles yesterday. And we're going to pay tribute to Ali Woodson. We're going to close the show with some music from Ali Woodson and the Temptations. And I would like to thank Sandra Thompson for teching, for doing the magic on the buttons today and making me look good. Any mistakes that you heard were mine and not hers. And we're going to end this little show with Treat Her Like a Lady by Ali Woodson. And maybe if we have more time, we'll play Some Enchanted Evening. I don't know if that's possible, but by the Temptations. But we leave you with the music of Ali Woodson.
Ready now for one of the most important events of our time, the 5th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party. The Congress convenes on July 10th through 14th in Washington, D.C. under the slogan, One People, One Party, One Destiny. Hear presentations by African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Eshetela and other leaders of the APSP, and witness as the party ushers in a new era of struggle. A new day is on the horizon. The U.S. front of the African Revolution will never be the same. For more info on the Congress, go to www.apspcongress.org or call 727-821-6620.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a 7-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshetela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Simple, creator of The Spirit of Marcus Garvey, a one-man show in which Simple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist International. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. Double occupancy and deposits start as low as $50 today, $250 by July 12th. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. That's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232.